Hi, everyone, and thank you for tuning into the Becker's Healthcare Podcast series. My name is Lucas Voss. I'm the custom content writer and coordinator here with Becker's Healthcare, and I'm pleased to be joined by Jim Bonsack, Chief Strategy Officer at Asperion, Spencer Alley, Chief AI Officer at Asperion, and Ya Shui, VP Data Science at Infinia ML. Jim, Spencer, and Ya, thank you so much for being here today. I'm very excited for this conversation.
Yeah, we're excited to be here, Lucas. Thanks for having us.
And to get us started, can you introduce yourselves and share a little bit about your professional background and current role at your organization here?
Yeah, I'll get it started. This is Jim Bonsack. I am currently the Chief Strategy Officer at Asperion, and I've been in the healthcare space going on over 25 years now, as a matter of fact, focused all my career in revenue cycle and technology services, all focused on the provider segment for the most part. And so here at Asperion, I've been here for a little over a year, pushed on a year and a half, and I've got responsibility for the broader strategy of the business, our M&A function, and importantly here, our product management function. So we're looking forward to the conversation. We appreciate you having us.
Hey everyone, Spencer Alley. I'm the Chief AI Officer here at Asperion. I've been with Asperion for the past a little over a year and a half, since the beginning of 2023. My background is in applied machine learning and AI in B2B regulated types of companies, so healthcare, regulatory compliance, financial services, et cetera. So excited to be here and talk through what we're doing at Asperion.
Hey everyone, this is Yashir. My background is in AI and machine learning. I got my PhD from Duke University. I've been working on various AI applications for about 15 years. In 2017, I co-founded Infinia ML, an AI startup based in Durham, North Carolina. And 6 years later, we joined Asperion and became its AI division.
Awesome. Jim, Spencer, and Ya, thank you so much again. Super excited for this conversation. We'll start it off here with some numbers that recently came out that I was very interested in as well. Healthcare finance leaders really continue to cite claims denials as a hindrance to cash growth efforts. And this number really surprised me, fairly high. More than half of finance leaders surveyed saw denial rates of 10% or more at their organizations last year. How can implementing AI for claims denials management really help address this challenge? And what are some of the key opportunities that you're seeing here?
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. It's been a crazy time here recently. I think the payer provider friction that's always been there has kind of hit a fever pitch here more recently. And what we're seeing with this increase in denials is really a result of the payers consolidating faster than the providers, having more capital to deploy and investing heavily in technology that allows them to deploy rules at a much more rapid pace to try, you know, in their words, I think, to ensure that good practice of medicine is happening and thinking about the cost and the setting and, you know, provider behavior, those kind of things. They're in effect the fiduciaries for policing some of that and how the spend occurs. And that is resulting with this increase in technology and speed with which they can process far more denials. So we're catching it on a provider side, on the back end of that, and going, wow, this increase is tremendous. The amount and volume is way higher than it's been in the past. We always had a tough time keeping up, but now even more importantly, the flavor of which those denials are coming are ones that are requiring clinical validation. So they require us to review the denial, pull the medical record, review the clinical documents that, you know, clinical documentation that happened within that visit, pull out key evidence to respond and say, no, this was really a complex case. That's why you should pay it at this rate. Or no, this really did need an inpatient stay. It can't be downgraded to an outpatient. And so it's not just taking a normal kind of administrative denials follow-up person to do that kind of correction. It's taking a higher level of individuals, such as a certified coder, a nurse, a clinician, or in our case, we use attorneys to make those arguments as well. And so as you think about AI and ML and that process, you think about how do we begin to increase capacity or drive efficiency by taking some of the more menial tasks out of that process of gathering documents, prioritizing which accounts we should work in what order and how we're submitting that stuff back, you can begin to see a path where you can automate across that journey. And that's what we're spending time and focus on. And I think the industry itself is trying to grapple with how do you begin to automate in that flow. And so Spencer can give more about kind of how we went about that and what we were doing.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. So as you think about the dynamics that Jim just talked about, and our role as Esperion as an RCM partner to our healthcare provider clients, we really think about how do we drive better outcomes for those clients. And when we think about that, we're really thinking about how do we get to more accounts faster, and then how do we lead to better outcomes on those accounts. And so when we think about the application of machine learning and AI, we've started with what we call our scoring models, where we can predict for any account coming in the likelihood of that account being resolved successfully or the denial being overturned. And then we can also calculate the expected value of that account and route it to the right place in our workflow and the right resource within our company to maximize the yield on that account. So that's the first part, is how do we use the predictive power of machine learning to route the right accounts to the right desks at the right time. And then as we think about the capabilities that are being unlocked by large language models and other advances in AI over the past 12 to 18 months, we start to get a lot more access to new possibilities around accelerating the way that we extract relevant data from medical records, take that data and use it to inform the way we write appeal letters, and ultimately cite in those appeal letters the right payer policies, the right managed care guidelines, so that we are maximizing the effectiveness and the throughput of those appeal letters. So we've developed AI-enabled assistants, and we're starting to move into more kind of automatic drafting of appeal letters that our humans review as part of their human in the loop, our expert clinicians and attorneys review as part of our process. And then next year, we're going to start looking more into pricing types of use cases, looking at managed care contracts as well. So really trying to pull the right information in from all of these different data sources that historically were not accessible, just being unstructured data sources, and now putting them at the fingertips of our expert operators and clinicians and attorneys so that we can really maximize these outcomes for our clients.
Yeah, Spencer, absolutely. And both of you, both Spencer and Jim, you both mentioned the two aspects of this too as well, speed and then also obviously workflow improvements, et cetera. What are some of the most significant and really the tangible results that you've seen in using the approach that you just described, the approach in denials management? And do you have some examples of this as you're seeing this?
Yeah, we do. It's been, it is an absolute journey that we're on. So I think that's important to note. You're not doing it all at once. It's not a silver bullet, but we are absolutely tracking and looking at, key results and as they impact our business and our clients specifically. And I think it breaks down very simply into, we measure, can we do it better? Can we capture more of the lost revenue for our clients? And that's in the form of our success rates or the yield we're getting. And we're seeing we've gone anywhere from 5 to 30%, depending on the denial type and the use case, that we've increased the amount we're capturing or our success rate in that. So kind of do it better is first. The next is do it faster, right? Don't let these things age out, pull my cash in and get it to me sooner. And so in that, we've seen some really material improvements in faster time to resolve these accounts, as we've increased our ability to push volume through upwards of 20%, just deploying these tools, helping them automate some of the workflow aspects of the job they were doing historically manually, and bringing these tools to bear on their process. And so that, do it better, do it faster. And lastly, really is an interesting do more. Can we push more through the current machine or, the humans? Can we go further down balance thresholds than other? Can we take other denial types broader in scope than what we had before? And I think that's really important as we think about this massive volume of increased denials activity that we're seeing, is we've got a labor shortage in the markets broadly, and we can't hire fast enough. And we can't just continue to throw bodies at it, because at some point, you got diminishing returns on working those accounts that are smaller dollars, et cetera. So as the machine becomes more available and more automation occurs, you can absolutely push more through and let the machine help expand capacity. And so we've seen quite a bit of that as well, which is kind of the third component. But Spencer, you can absolutely weigh in more here on how we're using the tools there to speed up what we're doing.
Yeah, I think those are some great stats around the operational outcomes that we are generating for clients and how we're seeing it impact our numbers. We also think about this from just a user and operations standpoint. So if you just think broadly about kind of historically people working these accounts in physical file folders off the side of their desk, and then moving to a more, you know, digital programmatic work queues where you're using just, you know, typical SaaS products to manage the work at the right time. Now, you know, if you think about how our teams actually do their work, it is all digital, but it's also with these AI tools embedded in that process. So the vast majority of our people now are working accounts that have been prioritized with the help of some of these models and are increasingly using these AI-enabled tools, as well as using tools that we integrate with via third-party APIs, whether that's third-party data sources, clearinghouses, other utilities, to streamline and remove waste basically from this process so that we can get more and more efficient for our clients.
Speaking of these tools, speaking of AI itself, again, it seems like every single day there is just one new tool that pops up here and there. It advances quickly every single day. There's a myriad of possibilities of leveraging AI in healthcare processes, really. How do we go about selecting optimal use cases in that space for denials management workflow?
Yep. So I'll start at a high level, and then Yaa can speak more in detail. But you know, Jim articulated kind of the overall context for the space that we're playing in and the space that we're trying to improve. It really all starts with a vision, right? So in healthcare, a patient walks in and needs help with the health related issue. There's not necessarily clarity at that time on who's going to pay, how much it's going to cost, at what time is that payment going to happen. Our goal and our vision is, as we continue to accelerate and automate pieces of this process, that we get closer and closer to a more real-time resolution of these accounts, whether they're, you know, new accounts that need to be submitted for payment or denials on the back end. And so if you have that vision and then an in-depth understanding of the RCM space, then you can start to look at, okay, what is the current state of our operation today? And where are those big opportunities, bearing in mind both where are the big bottlenecks, where are the big cost drivers and kind of inefficiency drivers in the system? And then what are the new possibilities with the advances of machine learning, particularly large language models, over the past year and a half or so? And then after that, it's your typical product prioritization process, thinking about feasibility, effort, risk, and especially how you build capabilities on top of each other to start creating a flywheel effect. But Yaa, do you want to speak a little bit more in detail about how we think about that kind of end-to-end opportunity analysis and then delivery?
Yes. So we take a three-phase approach: discovery, MVP, and expansion. The first phase, discovery, begins with an open-ended question, such as, can we automate appeal generation? The answer is not straightforward because each type of appeal requires a different level of effort, which translates into a different level of technical complexity when we design AI solution. So we first need to identify a subcategory that is relatively simple to tackle. Then in the MVP phase, we develop and productionize a solution just for that subcategory. Once the MVP is rolled out, we explore other subcategories and expand our solution to cover more complex areas.
And just to put kind of a finer point on that, it is important to us that as we build these new capabilities, that those build on each other and create this positive feedback loop or flywheel. For example, when we build a medical record assistant that's pulling relevant information out of medical records, that then is a capability that helps us build towards automated appeal letter generation for certain appeal letter types. So really thinking about building these capabilities kind of brick by brick to build the full house is really important as we think about how we make the most impact here.
Yeah, Spencer, I was thinking about that just now too. And that's especially important for integration as well and being able to successfully integrate those tools, which leads me to my next question here too, which can you share some of these insights and best practices when folks are looking to integrate AI tools into existing workflows? And they come with challenges, I'd imagine. And what challenges are you seeing there particularly, and what can people do to really overcome them in the space?
Yes, you're right. We've had many challenges. The first one is system integration. You know, quite often AI applications have requirements that legacy data infrastructure just cannot meet. Also, it's not only integration with our main campus platform. There are several other data systems dedicated to different service lines in our company. To address these issues, we work closely with Aspirant's core technology team to build new data pipelines and create flexible integration interfaces for those different systems. Another challenge is quality assessment of large language model responses. You know, when we use ChatGPT, we can give a thumbs up or down to show how we like the answer. The challenge here is how to automatically measure the quality of response. This is a research front in the AI field. So our team has developed an evaluation framework that's tailored to our use cases and also can trigger different downstream tasks based on the quality of the responses. I'll pass it, Spencer.
Yeah, a couple others to keep in mind as you're thinking about, if you're thinking about rolling these types of solutions out yourself in your own organization. Yaa talked about some of the technical issues. There's also just change management more broadly. So these systems, we talk a lot about automation. The reality is that these are all human in the loop systems where there are parts of it that are automated, and then we have our experts, our clinicians, our attorneys, et cetera, who are looking at the output of a lot of those, for automation components, and then ensuring that the quality threshold that we commit to for our clients are met. And so from a user standpoint and from an operational standpoint, having those SMEs and those users involved in the design and development of the system early is really important. And investing in UX user experience research and design, even in a kind of back-end internal system like this, is really important so that when we actually deploy it, it's adopted quickly and effectively, rather than it feeling like something that the users and the team didn't have a stake in. So really just thinking through that change management, communicating early and often, thinking about learning and development and training and hypercare periods, those are all keys to making sure that the rollout is successful. And then that's not even touching some of the data components, which I know Jim can speak about.
Yeah, it's been really interesting on this journey. As you think you've got good access to data, you think you've got good curated data, and then you start to look at what the system or the machine needs to be able to power itself with the data, and you go, there's a lot of gaps in there that our human friends are filling in along the way. And so you begin to understand some of the underlying structural challenges with how you need to refine and curate the importance of the data that, I call that the fuel that goes into the engine, which is our DocIQ large language model platform that helps do the automation
And so you kind of, it exposes some of the shortcomings and some of those things that you assumed to be available. And so, like I said, a lot of learning on this journey. It's been amazing to see what the technology can do. I think the other, you know, key lesson is you don't have to jump straight. This is not a silver bullet. You know, this new technology is not going to just all of a sudden automate a process. It is that journey, and you can get incremental gains along the way by allowing the machines to do some of the work that the humans were doing and just speeding up the humans, as we mentioned, doing it faster. That has been a real benefit as we've, you know, started to put these components in place towards our ultimate goal of full automation. But along those lines, you're learning and you're seeing incremental improvements, which I think is really important.
Yeah, absolutely, Jim. And you all mentioned the word journey, which I really love, because I think especially with these types of tools, as we integrate these new technologies into workflows and try to create more efficiency, again, Spencer, that you mentioned that as well, in terms of, you know, we need to bring everybody together in the process itself. We need to have conversations from the get-go to be able to say, okay, how can we achieve this? How does it work? Where can we improve? So I think that that's a key part of this process itself. As we get towards the end here of our conversation, is there anything we didn't cover, any final thoughts that you want to share with folks that are going down this path, that are looking into some of these technologies, looking to improve?
Yeah, I'll close it with this. I mean, one, thank you for having us. This was a great conversation. We appreciate the time. We feel like it's our duty as we go along this journey, and we as partners with provider organizations, to share what we've learned. I think it's really important for the broader healthcare industry as a whole to, you know, provide some of those lessons, the watch outs, the look out for this kind of stuff. It benefits the overall industry as a whole. We know there's a massive amount of waste and expense associated with the administrative side of healthcare. And so if we can collectively begin to take some of that out, that helps everyone. And so we are more than happy to invest. We're investing heavily in doing this and learning a lot along the way. And we want to share that information with the broader industry. So we appreciate the time here. We're looking forward to meeting with everybody at the Becker's Conference in Chicago and sharing more insights at that point. So thanks for having us.
Thanks, Jim. Yeah, staying with the theme here, thanks for taking us on this journey together. Jim, Spencer, and Yah, for your time, and certainly for all of your insights, for the great discussion today. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Lucas.
And I'd certainly like to thank Asperion as well for sponsoring. And you can also tune into more podcasts from Becker's Healthcare by visiting our podcasts page at beckershospitalreview.com/podcasts.